Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The way we did elections in the before times, before coronavirus, we stood in line, showed our photo ID to some nice people, went to the computer screen, touched on that computer screen to pick candidates that we like, and then we went home. But with this contagious disease passing through the population, things are now more complicated. That doesn't mean we're not going to be doing it that way. That's going to be decided. But there are pleas from public health experts and voting rights experts that say this is not a good idea. What we ought to be doing is having expanded voting by mail. So what do you want to see happening with the coming elections? Do you want to be able to vote by mail, or do you consider that a vulnerability to our election system? Give us a call. We want to hear what you got to think, what you're thinking about. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined by Jackie Callahan, the Bexar County Elections Administrator. Jackie Callahan, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Also with us, Alexis Ura, Associate Editor and Reporter for the Texas Tribune. Alexis Ura, good to have you today.
Hi.
And joining us, Paul Grunke is a professor of political science and the director of the Early Voting Information Center Research Group at Reed College. Paul Grunke, good to have you today.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Let me go to Jackie. Jackie Callahan, if you could tell us what you think are the rules right now. Can everyone vote by mail right now, or is it limited to the 65 and people who are sick and we were going to be out of the county during that month?
Yes, at this point right now, the case from the 353rd district has been appealed. And so that means that now we're waiting for the two federal lawsuits that are going to be held in the Western District. So as it stands right now, we still have the four categories that anyone who qualifies can use for a by mail that we've had for years.
And the main one is if you're 65 or older, you can vote by mail.
Absolutely. It's a rite of passage. It really isn't. And we have a lot of voters here in Bexar County that do take advantage of that.
And we've had a lot of people who haven't taken advantage of it. Maybe they didn't know or they like the process. But I think if there's any big takeaway I would like to have people to take from this program today is that if you're 65 or older on election day, you could vote by mail.
Absolutely. And I know we're going to, you know, use the media and we'll be really working it hard for the November election, because also in the midst of the COVID-19, this November election will be the first election in many, many, many years that we do not have the option of a straight party ticket. Normally, as anyone knows, in the November election, the voter could go in and pull, you know, basically one button and then just go through the ballot. But this time, we just know that it's going to take the voters longer to get through the ballot between no straight party, and because we've postponed all of the May elections to November, these ballots are going to be long. So we are hoping that we can get as many of our senior citizens to take advantage of the rite of passage and to vote at home.
Right, but also people can, if they want to avoid going out in public and voting in person where it could be crowded, there's going to be a lot of in-person contact, if there's you're in the middle of pandemic, not a good place to be, according to public health officials. Paul Grunke, professor of political science at Reed College, can you talk about what are the concerns about in-person voting? Why are people saying we should be looking at this hard?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, this is an issue nationwide, David, as you know, and Jackie is as well positioned as anyone really to talk about the challenges in Bexar County and in San Antonio. There are facilities challenges, quite frankly, you know, where we have traditionally held elections in many places using community locations such as schools, community centers, senior citizen centers, I'm presuming that in a lot of states and localities, potentially also in Bexar County, elections are not going to be particularly welcome at those locations. It's not that they're not supportive, obviously, of the goals of conducting a free and fair election, but also a healthy election. When you have school children and school children could be vectors for transmission, I think we're really going to have to rethink where we hold these in-person elections. Many jurisdictions have been considering consolidating locations. That's problematic as well. That has to be done very carefully to retain full accessibility and equity for everyone. So, the challenge is doing this and maintaining social distancing when really an in-person election is in many ways a hands-on election. There are going to be challenges. I'm sure Jackie has been wrestling with many of those and is thinking ahead, as many election officials are nationwide, trying to prepare for November.
Alexa Ura with the Texas Tribune. You've been reporting on this issue. Who is calling for expanded voting by mail? Who's behind that?
So at this point, you've got kind of a coalition of the state Democratic Party, but also individual voters from across the state who have signed on as plaintiffs in the series of lawsuits, and civic organizations that do work on the voting rights front, whether that's voter registration or get out the vote. And the idea being that in the pandemic, the rules that normally apply to who qualifies to vote by mail aren't going to work when you think about who can qualify based on what the state defines as a disability, and basically arguing, you know, everyone right now has a physical condition that puts their health at risk if they go vote in person, and that's the lack of immunity to the coronavirus.
That is the central issue. We've heard from Democratic leaders in Texas saying that already under the present law, looking at it at the way that you mentioned, or is it that this is going to be, we're already kind of disabled. Our health is in jeopardy. If we have fear of becoming severely ill going to vote, then we shouldn't have to. And then the Republican leaders, Ken Paxton, the attorney general, saying that's not the law, and that's going to a judge to figure that out. Correct, Alexa?
So the way the attorney general has laid this out is he has pointed to the language of the Texas election code, saying, you know, the way this is laid out, this is for people who already have an illness. It's not about fear of getting an illness. That's a little bit different than what the judge in the only ruling we've gotten so far from the state district judge in Travis County that didn't focus on the fear of getting the virus being a qualified voter. Instead, he focused on the lack of immunity being the physical condition that qualifies a voter. And so there's some parsing of the election code and what folks are arguing, but the ruling itself are focused on immunity. The AG is focusing on fear and saying that that's not sufficient enough of a disability, even though that's not necessarily what the legal arguments on the other side are focusing on, and it's not what the ruling was based on.
All right, I'm going to play a voicemail along those lines. This is from Don.
Hi, this is Don Sheehan. I'm a citizen here, taxpayer, voter. And I very much believe we need to have ballots that we can send in by mail. I have a COPD issue. I'm 64. And frankly, I have no interest in contracting someone else's virus in my lungs, which will kill me. So, yeah, we should have write-in ballots. It should be more liberal so people can vote, not disenfranchise people just for various reasons.
All right. To that point, Paul Grunke with the Early Voting Information Center Research Group at Reed College. This is an issue that is not just limited to Texas. We saw it in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And listen, Don raises a very important point. You know, the current guidelines, as far as I understand, in Texas places the local official in a really untenable position to try to evaluate a claim like Don's on an individualized basis in 254 counties across the great state of Texas. And that is, there's a chance for inequities there, for disenfranchisement. Why 65? Why not 64? What about a 50-year-old who's taking care of an extended family with elderly relatives and children? What about my wonderful daughter-in-law living in Plano with our 5-month-old twin babies that we haven't seen for 4 months? Shout out to her. So it's I think it's very difficult to place local officials in a position where they have to make those judgments. So yes, that's right, David. A lot of states have already made a decision for just for this election to be much more aggressive, either in mailing out no excuse ballots to everyone, or at least allowing for a much more liberal interpretation of the rules, including a fear, as Alexa said, a fear of infection as being an identified health risk.
So Jackie Callinan, the Bexar County Elections Administrator, Don comes to you, writes in, I want a mail-in ballot. He's 64. He's got COPD, doesn't want to get to COVID. But what do you tell him?
The COPD would absolutely already qualify him to get a disability ballot, where obviously there's no age requirement. It's an ongoing medical issue. And for your listeners, and Paul's done such a great job laying this out, in the state of Texas and probably throughout the country, the elections offices are not an investigative body. And that's real important for everyone to hear that statement. So when the applications come in, we take them. We absolutely process them. We are not an investigative. Years and years and years ago when we had mail ballots for the disabled, they had to provide documentation. But the state of Texas loosened that requirement up years and years ago. And so now it's there for anyone who has an ongoing situation. And congratulations on those twins, Paul. It also includes, you know, pregnant women. It's for exactly the sensitive. It's for without asking any questions. So we don't qualify. We accept the applications that come in if they are properly filled out, you know. And so, again, that's one of the things we do.
You just have to write in, I have COPD, I have asthma, I have respiratory issues, and that's enough?
And Dave, well, that's too much. On the state application for ballot by mail, there are literally four little check boxes. One is for over 65, one is for disabled, one is for out of county, and one is confined in jail but not finally convicted. So they would just check the disability box. There is no line for them to provide the reason or the qualification. It's just taking that box and checking that one box.
Alexa Ura, though, at the Texas Tribune, Crystal Mason, who voted illegally, and she got 5 years in prison for that. They're not messing around. So do you think people will be thinking about Crystal Mason if they try to pass themselves off as having a disability if they don't have it?
Well, I think the case that you're referring to is vastly different than what we're talking about. But I don't think you can kind of look over the letter that the attorney general sent to local election officials, you know, raising the prospect that anyone who encouraged to apply for voting by mail under these sort of expanded circumstances that are, you know, in question as part of this litigation, that they could face criminal prosecution. And I think you can't sort of look at the state of voting in Texas over the last few years and decades and not think that comments like that or advice like that or letters like that don't play a role into how voters take that information and then apply it to their own decision-making about what to do. And so, you know, I think it's one of those things that we're going to have to see a lot of information coming out of locals to their voters about what the rules are and what qualifies them. But, you know, I think amid this litigation, amid the back and forth between the attorney general and county officials who have indicated, at least in some places, that they are interpreting the disability provision more broadly to include people who would risk infection because of this lack of immunity. You know, you're basically heading into these elections in which we're going to need some clarity at some point so voters aren't disenfranchised over the confusion about what qualifies them and what doesn't.
Right. And so, yeah, the Crystal Mason case was different, but the enforcement in that area, the heavy time that she received in prison for her mistake. And it certainly was like a marquee case where it seemed like they were trying to send a message.
And I think what it gets back to is that, you know, we have 254 counties in this state. We have 254 election administrators running these elections locally, and you have 200 and some DAs also taking into consideration those rules and what they might see as violations. I think this is one of those things where folks are asking for some uniformity so voters know exactly
right.
What qualifies them to vote by mail.
Yeah, so we'll try it and see if we're getting good direction coming from the Secretary of State's office. Our phone line is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Are you concerned about voting in person in the upcoming election? We'll be right back. To The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about voting by mail and some of the concerns about that during this pandemic and whether or not you should be forced to vote by in person or if you have the option to vote by mail. What are the concerns? What are the benefits? What are the public health experts saying about this? You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We got an email from Rebecca. I am 67 years old, San Antonio resident. I downloaded the vote by mail application. I mailed it in before the runoff election was postponed. Will I receive a ballot for the July 14th runoff election? Do I need to resubmit my request? I also noticed that the application did not require my voter ID number. Why was that not needed? Jackie Callahan is with us, and she is the Bexar County Elections Administrator. What do you got for Rebecca?
Well, for Rebecca, if the application has been processed and it was filled out to ask for the election, the primary, any runoff, if it was an annual application for the entire year, you will automatically get a ballot for that. We received applications, for instance, for the May 2nd election that was postponed. Those applications are all going to roll until November. So there's a number of floating target, so to speak, but no matter what we do, we always come down on the side of the voter. So we do not want to disenfranchise anyone. And as far as the question on your VUID or your voter registration number, every application that we get in, we have to vet. And so we will look up the voter registration number and attach it to it. So, you know, a lot of times it's difficult for the voters to have that long number with them, and we don't want them to have to go to the trouble of making an additional phone call to get that. We'll gladly put that on their applications as they're received.
Jackie Callahan, when I turn in a mail-in, I'm going to vote by mail if I can, vote in, and when does that get counted? How does that get counted?
Once the mail ballots are returned, we scan them so that we can make sure that they've been filled out, the back of the envelope's been filled out correctly with the voter's signature. Then the early ballot board works about a week before the election, qualifying these ballots, opening them, and preparing them for the central count station. Now, the election code permits large counties of over 100,000 or more registered voters to start processing the ballots at the end of early voting. So when early voting ends at Friday night, we usually start absolutely qualifying and counting, processing. We never know what the, you know, we know how many ballots we have, but we don't know what the results are for any particular candidate until Election Day. And there has always been this misnomer or this, we refer to it as an urban legend that has come out of the 2000 and 2002 Florida, where they said that they didn't count the absentee. And again, here in Texas, we've petitioned our legislature, and they've done a wonderful thing to put us at ease, and I think for all of the voters who vote by mail. As we know, the U.S. postal system is having some struggles. And so we had noticed ourselves that the day after the election, if it was a Tuesday, you know, on our Tuesday election, when we received our mail, we would have 200 to 1,000 ballots that came in the day after the election. And they had been postmarked well before Election Day. And so last year, the legislature agreed to allow us to process and count, qualify and count any ballot that's been postmarked before election but arrives to us the day after the election. And that is just one of the most positive things. And I want to say it's a feel-good moment for us because it was so frustrating for us to get those ballots. So please rest assured, every ballot that comes back into us, we count and we hold it basically sacred. So we've got a good system here, and we would be glad to talk about it at greater length.
Do you do signature comparisons?
Absolutely. When the applications come in, they're scanned, and we highlight and clip the signature. Then when the returned mail ballot comes in, we again scan it, look for that signature, clip that signature, and we have a program then that matches the two signatures before the early ballot board will accept it.
And if your signature changes enough, so, I mean, sometimes I sign it one way, another day if I'm tired, I sign it another way. And how close does it have to be? And if it doesn't match up, do I get, what do you do?
Well, exactly. I mean, obviously the early ballot board are not handwriting experts. And again, we were able to petition the legislature. And so when we have these two signatures, and as you write, I mean, you know, I'll start in the morning and write. My signature may look entirely different by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So the legislature has allowed us to compare the last 6 signatures that we have on file from that voter. And so, you know, they're doing a very, very good job of finding out, you know, well, that capital J looks the same on this one and this, you know, and it's just, it's wonderful.
But there are some concerns I hear from people who are opposed to expanding vote by mail as this opens the door to massive voter fraud. Paul Gronke, professor of political science, director of the Early Voting Information Center Research Group at Reed College. What do you think about that issue being raised? Is this voter, does this allow greater voter fraud?
Well, you know, the signature verification process is one of the key processes there. And Jackie describes a good process. I have to say probably the best process is the one that has been put in place, admittedly over a long period of time, in states with much larger numbers of by-mail ballots, including Oregon, Colorado, Washington, who have all mail ballots, where they have actually a database of signatures that will be going back to the DMV records in a variety of places. I suspect the staff in the larger counties in Texas, as well as the ones in Oregon, they do receive expert training by forensic experts to learn about signature verification, and there's a whole quite sophisticated process in place. So if the vote by mail ballots do increase dramatically in Texas, as I suspect the request rates will, some of the larger counties may want to put in place some of these protocols. In terms of fraud, look, there's minuscule levels of voter fraud in the United States, really minuscule. There are some high profile cases. Most of those cases, they're more likely to be associated with by mail ballots, absentee ballots. To me, that's a risk. There's a risk in those, and you want to minimize that risk as much as possible by putting in place ballot tracking systems, by designing appropriate ballot envelopes, by having a robust signature verification process. Many people will refer to the case in North Carolina recently, North Carolina 9. I think that's a bit misleading. North Carolina had a fairly weak regime for absentee ballots. They allowed many people to deliver the ballots for the voter, something that I've never done. I'm not comfortable with giving my ballot to anyone. I either put it in the mailbox, most often I return it by hand. But that's really a very anomalous case of really ballot theft. There's always going to be people trying to manipulate elections. When we have experts like Jackie and others who are really committed to making sure the process is as safe and has the highest level of integrity, the risks are extremely low here. And it's just kind of, that's another urban legend that vote by mail opens up for massive ballot fraud. It's just not true.
Alexa Ura with the Texas Tribune, we are hearing, though, from Governor Greg Abbott and from Attorney General Ken Paxton that this is the concern, fraud. What are they saying?
So So what we've heard from the governor is that he would like to keep some form of in-person voting, which at this point is not in question at any point. The language that we've seen coming out of the Attorney General's office is sort of focused on the, quote, integrity of the election. I agree that the evidence has shown that voter fraud in the U.S. continues to be minimal and rare, and that obviously there are some weak links that have been identified and folks have worked around those. But the way that the AG's office has presented this in part is focused on the idea of election integrity, though their arguments for the most part have been focused on the definitions of what constitutes a disability under the Texas Election Code.
Let's go to the callers. This is Chad. Chad, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yeah, I had a quick question. I'll take my answer off the air. My question is, I'm really not worried about here in Texas as much, but my concern is that if we approve these mail ballots, will the federal government be able to, or someone in the federal government, be able to negate those votes in a way of manipulation? And I'll take my answer off here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that. Paul Gronke at the Early Voting Information Center. What do you say?
Well, there's not going to be a federal ability to discount particular votes. Elections in the United States are primarily, overwhelmingly, don't want to dig into the constitutional provisions here, but they're run by states and then by jurisdictions. That's less of a concern. I think a larger concern is, will there be sufficient funding provided by the federal government in this emergency situation to allow states to obtain the machinery and put in place the protocols that they need in order to adapt, whether it be to adapt the early in-person, the in-person voting locations. So some of the choices that Jackie may have to make are going to cost her money because some of her traditional locations may not be available, and she's going to have to find new locations. Sounds simple until you look at all of the requirements of a voting location, disability, handicap access, reliable internet access. Now it's going to be sufficient space for social distancing. So this is not easy and it's not cheap. But no, the federal government is not going to negate these. Rather, the concerns will be, is there sufficient accessibility for all the various ways that people choose to cast the ballots under these abnormal situations?
We're taking another break and our phone lines are open. If you got a question, a comment about vote by mail or vote in person, we've got a runoff election for the primaries. Yeah, remember it's Super Tuesday? Well, this is from that. That's coming up in mid-July. Also, we've got the big one in November, November the 3rd. Call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We got an email from Michael. Can individuals diagnosed with PTSD or other issues that occur, can they vote by mail, claim the disability? Jackie Callinan?
Again, like we spoke before, when the voter marks disability, we do not have the ability to question that. And,
but I understand that part. But people, can they, in good conscience, can they say, I don't, you know, and realize that if they get questioned by, if you know, Ken Paxton comes knocking on their door and says, hey, you voted by mail, you said you're disabled, and what do you, how do you, you know, and I said, well, I have PTSD, and they're going to tell them that's not good enough, or that's, oh, sorry about that, and then move on.
No, I think, again, PTSD is a recognized disability. It's a recognized pre-existing condition. I think that's the language that they use, a pre-existing condition. So I think that would absolutely qualify.
All right. And we have a from Karen. I would like to vote by mail because of COVID-19. Very concerned. Most likely I will not vote in the primaries if I'm not able to vote by mail. I'm going to consider what to do in November. I really would like to change this to take place so all of us can vote and remain healthy. And so Paul Gronke with the Early Voting Information Center is that's the concern, that this will have a dampening effect on people going to go vote. And is that what you see? And do you think that concern will play heavily on one party or another?
Well, I don't know if it will be a partisan concern, but it is a concern that I'm hearing, which is why, as I said, in many states, governors have already made a decision to either dramatically relax, to allow for an expressed fear of infection to be a qualification, either temporarily for this election. And in some states, they're sending no excuse or excuse required absentee ballot requests to everyone. I do have to say, to respond a little bit to the comment about the integrity of the Texas election, of course, this is a concern. My concern as well is that turnout in Texas has historically been low. It's been well below the national average. And with all the comments about integrity, I wonder if there's any comments about making sure that the voice of the Texans are heard in this very critical period as they're choosing their political leaders. So I just want to weigh that along with all of the other concerns about a safe and secure, but also accessible election.
Let's go back to the phone lines with Sandra. Sandra, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, my name is Sandra, and my comment is that most of the vulnerable population with COVID-19 is above 65, so the mail-in option is for them available. And we're becoming really good in our state in all kinds of public locations of, you know, preventing the virus through our social distancing and, you know, tabs where people stand and hand sanitizer and all those kind of options. So I just was thinking mail-in for everybody seems a little bit unnecessary. So that's my comment.
All right, Sandra, thank you for that. 65 and older, is that really going to be a protection for the entire population who would be voting, everyone 18 and up? Jackie Callinan, Bexar County Elections Administrator, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, Paul has stated it so eloquently. I mean, we are faced right now with obviously protecting the voters, and at the same time, if not equally important, the protection of our election officials. Here in Bexar County, the average age of our election officials is 72.5. And right now, again, Paul mentioned, you know, the schools, which we have 65% of our voting sites, they're closed now, and they are not going to be available for July 14th. And so we are looking for alternative places. But in the meantime, we've already made our shopping list, so to speak, from the hand sanitizers to the masks to the face shields. You know, we're looking at handing each one of the voters a plastic glove so that they obviously do not, when they use the touch screen, they are protected and that they're protecting the next voter. We already have the signs made for the floors for social distancing. And the last thing we're doing right now is that we have three examples because we asked to have customized those voting shields or however you go. Like when you go to a grocery store, they have the plexiglass now. And we're going to put those on all of our tables where the voters are qualified. So there's a lot going on, and everyone, obviously, like I said, we're looking at this protection, not only for the voters as they come in, but again, for the election officials. So there's a lot of time, and we are blessed that I can only speak for here in Bexar County, but when the stimulus money came down to the states, we've set aside $2.5 million to enhance the election budget so that we can assure, you know, getting the message out and keeping everyone as safe as we possibly can.
Jackie Callinan, we have a voter ID law in Texas where you have to show your ID, photo ID, and you look at me and you say, okay, that's you. Do I have to remove my mask?
Not at this time. That's again, one of the questions that we are dealing with. We were making sure that, as I said, with those plexiglass shields, we don't want the voter to have to hand their driver's license or their photo ID to the election official. So we made sure that we have scanners now that we can scan their licenses through the plexiglass. So again, we're in a new world.
What good is a voter ID law if a person can wear this huge bandana all over their face and you can only see like the glint of their eyes?
The glint of their eyes and their hair, that is going to be a challenge. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We have a lot of sensitivity training that we're going to be doing, too, for our election officials on how to handle the people that either don't have their masks on or are upset about the wait. I mean, there's just all of these pieces that play into keeping a poll site efficient and safe for all involved.
I had heard that on Super Tuesday, which was kind of a mess, you know, there was a shortage of poll workers that day, because that's when we were first starting to hear about COVID-19 and how it was harder on the elderly, and a lot of the elderly folks who were our poll workers didn't show up. And are you hearing that that's what's going to happen on the next coming elections?
Yes, we definitely are. We stay in touch with our officials, and, you know, and God bless them. A lot of them are saying, yes, we'll be there. Because, again, for the generation of people that are our election officials, they would do this for them, it's civic duty. It's pride, and it's civic duty. I know here in Texas we all have a stipend for our election officials, but I can tell you that a lot of these people would be there for the citizens because it is so near and dear to their hearts.
So you don't anticipate a shortage?
No. And again, what we've already done and put forth is I already have put a request in here to Bexar County, to our Bexar County family, and had asked for a number of the employees to be assigned to the election day polls. So that, you know, for instance, in the county clerk's office or the district clerk's office, that we can take a number of those people and supplement our poll site staff if need be.
And fewer sites? Do you anticipate having to have fewer voting sites because you can't find the locations that you need?
We may. I don't think it will be drastic. But again, due to social distancing, we'll have to have a space that's larger to be able to spread out the units that we need so that everybody's not right on top of each other.
Alexa Ura with the Texas Tribune. There's a lawsuit filed on this. I believe there is an important hearing coming up on Friday here in San Antonio on this. What are we looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I think to Jackie's point about some of the preparations that are being made, that is sort of being echoed around the state as officials try to prepare for these elections, regardless of the outcome of some of this litigation. We know that there's going to be an increase in voting by mail regardless, or that they're anticipating, just because more people who qualify might be using that. What we're seeing on the court front is a series of litigation. We've got a Friday hearing in a federal lawsuit sort of challenging the ability to hold an election under the traditional way we do it under the circumstances brought on by the coronavirus pandemic. And there is a hearing for a preliminary injunction there, basically to get a court to say the way we do this normally doesn't work in a pandemic. And so we'll have to wait and see how the federal judge takes some of the arguments, including the restrictions on who can qualify to vote by mail.
And Jackie Callinan, if there is this green light from the federal judge saying voting by mail for everyone who wants it, do you have the resources to do that?
We are preparing for that, yes. I mean, we have a leg up. For instance, for the primary runoff, we already had 25,000 applications from the people who voted on March 3rd. And so what we're doing is sort of clearing the deck and preparing those 25,000 so that they're sitting there in anticipation. And I guess the thing that we just don't know, and I would look to see what Paul would say, is how many people are actually going to vote, because, you know, he mentioned that we have a very poor turnout in Texas. And when we've held primary runoffs in the past, for instance, in 2016, we only had a 2.7% turnout. And when we looked at 2018, we'd only had a 5% turnout.
Right, but people are anticipating that this is going to be one of the biggest general elections in decades here in Texas with so much on the line. I want to thank all of our guests, Jackie Callinan, the Bexar County Elections Administrator, Alexa Ura, the Texas Tribune, Paul Gronke with the Vote Early Voting Information Center at Reed College. This is The Source from Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.